So when I was in seminary, I had the unique opportunity to take a one-day street retreat in San Francisco. The Faithful Fools Street Ministry served the homeless population in the Tenderloin. Kay knows it. It offered people one-day or week-long opportunities to bear witness to encounter people who were living on the streets. I know it can sound maybe at first blush like some kind of slum tourism, but it wasn't just about gawking at how the poor live. It was really about serving, the Faithful Fools served this neighborhood and served these folks in a variety of ways. And this particular program, the Street Retreat Program, was designed to help those of us who participated in it to become fully present to and to remove all of our ordinary mental barriers that we use to maintain a sense of distance from people that we think are unlike ourselves. The preparation for this experience included learning a mantra that we were encouraged to repeat to ourselves throughout the day. The mantra was, "What holds me separate? What keeps me separate? As I walk the streets, what still connects me?" And I didn't really understand the full impact of those words until I was strolling through the streets and noticing my own sense of separation and isolation. I continued working with that mantra, setting my intention to release all of the barriers that my class privilege placed between myself and this community of people living and sleeping outside in the doorways and alleys. And as my fear relaxed and my guard softened, I came to see a whole network of relationships that were taking place just under the surface of the city life, largely invisible to those who have jobs and homes and places to be. It was always there, but I just didn't see it before. This word, privilege, by definition, it implies a separation. It's a barrier between people. You have privilege over someone, or you have privilege in relationship to someone. To have privilege is to have it relative to someone else, right? And yet separation from one another is a big cause of our spiritual suffering. It's a source of spiritual poverty. And so when I say the poverty of privilege, I'm talking about the spiritual poverty that happens often as a result of economic or class privilege. The opposite would be spiritual enrichment or spiritual wealth. And that's a sense of connectedness, a sense of unity with all people and with our natural world. But here's what I'm wrestling with. How can we have that sense of oneness, of connectedness with all people, when we have economic wealth and others are literally starving, dying in our own communities and around the world without food or adequate medical treatment? How do we justify that drastic imbalance? And I'm not just talking to those of you who live in mansions and drive Teslas. If you came here in a car that you put gas in and pay insurance on, and if you live in a house or an apartment that has heat and running water, if you have food in your pantry to spare, we are among the 1% globally. So I suspect the only way it is that we can feel okay about this troubling fact is that we close a little bit of something down between ourselves and other people. We set up some kind of distancing mechanism in our mind. We justify and explain. I mean, we bemoan how complex and broken the economic system is, and we shake our heads about how unfair it is, and we work like crazy to feed the homeless, and we give away our money to organizations that are helping people, and we work to change these policies that got us here. We do what we can to ease their physical and our psychic pain. There's a concept that Chris and I use a lot in our discussions. It's not the thing itself, but it's our relationship to that thing. So the problem isn't in the money we have or the stuff we have. There's nothing inherently wrong with having things. But it's the relationship we have with our money or with our stuff. The problem is it seems to be very tricky. It's very hard for us to have stuff and not become egoically invested in it in some way. And this egoic investment in our material wealth leads us to believe that we need it in order to feel okay. Right? Our well-being depends upon a certain amount of money in our bank in order to feel safe or secure. We all have a different amount, but you know what I'm talking about. There's some level of, I need to feel okay. And we believe that in some way, our stuff defines us. Who we are is reflected in the car we drive, our zip code, where we travel, what clothes we wear, what cell phone we use, etc. We get into spiritual trouble when we begin to tell ourselves that we deserve the stuff that we have. Deserving is such a dangerous concept. Or when we convince ourselves that we have the wealth we have because we worked so much harder than people without wealth work. And I know we don't really think we work harder than people working three jobs at minimum wage. The inherent implication of that way of thinking is that we are better somehow, more meriting than people who don't have. Because if we didn't earn it through our own hard work and brilliance, then by our same logic, we don't really deserve it. And that idea is troubling. But I think deep down, some part of us knows that it isn't really fair, that the playing field isn't really level. And the fact that we have more than others do is spiritually troubling. It's upsetting. And it brings up feelings of guilt and shame, which further separate us, right? We're torn because we want to feel good about ourselves. We are good people, right? And we want to keep our stuff. I love my stuff. Most of us were dealt whatever hand we were dealt in life, and I'm sure, I have no doubt, that each of us are doing the very best we can for ourselves and our children and our communities. But the honest truth is, our privilege is dependent upon other people's poverty. I know that's hard to hear, it's hard to get our heads around, but for us to be this wealthy, somebody has to be starving. It's connected. This nation and all of our collective wealth was built on the backs of people who were kidnapped and enslaved, and the looted spoils from the lands that our ancestors invaded. We are a society out of integrity with ourselves if we don't acknowledge that. And if we continually prop up this false narrative that the wealthy deserve their wealth and those in poverty somehow deserve their poverty. And I will go so far as to say that this is one of the fundamental sicknesses of our dominant culture. But in order to restore our hearts to peace, we have to have the courage to look at this open-eyed and open-hearted. Reminds me of the biblical passage about it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into heaven. It's not that having money is a sin. That's not at all what I mean. But it's that hidden shame and guilt and identification, egoic identification with our wealth, that keeps us separate from others. And then when we're separate from others, we don't get to have that feeling of joy, of authentic connection with everyone we meet. That mantra comes to mind again. What holds us separate? What keeps us separate? And what still connects us? My experience has been that when you realize that you don't actually deserve anything you have a feeling of immense gratitude. And feeling that gratitude, and with it a co-occurring sense of humility. And remember, humility isn't just not feeling better than. It's also not feeling any worse than. It's humility is realizing our oneness, our connectedness, our equality with every other person. So that sense of humility that comes when we have the gratitude about our material wealth. And that is the answer that will help heal this sense of separation. But when some part of our brain is not allowing us to fully recognize this appalling fact that we have immense wealth, while others really don't, that tendency to feel guilt and shame is, that's where the mistake is made, because we begin to think that our value as a human being is at stake, right? Whether or not we are a good person. It's not connected in any way. Whether or not you are a good person has nothing to do with what's in your bank account or what you own. You can engage authentically with people who have wildly different material wealth than you when you take that off the table. But when you have unconsciously have this egoic investment in your own material wealth, we have so many tells, right? We give it away. We telegraph it to people who don't have material wealth. Any pride we have, all the self-identification, all the value that we place on ourselves based on the things that we own, people can pick that up from us. And they don't want to engage authentically with us because they can see that we're not really seeing them. We're not acknowledging the situation. And we're not really seeing ourselves. What holds us separate? What keeps us separate? And what still connects us? So here's where I think our spiritual work is. Disinvesting ourselves from the false currency of material wealth. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't mean that we're not going to keep using money. We need the material wealth. We're in a pledge drive right now. Our institution depends upon you and your money coming into this institution. But removing your sense of self-worth about it, you know, like Allison's story, putting yourself in the center of this community and hearing that you are a good and beautiful and wonderful person. I believe that about all of us. So taking apart our sense of self-worth from the material. It's two different economies. The cost of our privilege is authentic relationship with people who have less or people who have been systematically deprived of privilege. So investing ourselves only in the spiritual currency. We all know somebody who can just talk to anybody, right? You know somebody like that. They just talk to anybody and everybody everywhere you go with them. Maybe you're that person. A couple of from this congregation who have moved away come to mind, Nancy and Roger Harmon. Just embody that to me, those of you who know them. They can talk to anybody, and it's because there's no investment in them about feeling inferior or superior. That just isn't there. The question isn't even on the table. They're just interested in true connection. They're not focusing on the things that separate them from other people. They're focusing only on the things that unite us. They have done their inner work to remove these barriers of class privilege. So I invite us to allow ourselves to face the truth that we don't deserve the wealth that we have in our life, and that deserve just isn't the right word, and to cultivate those feelings instead of gratitude and humility. The reading that we heard earlier began with the words, "The central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all." Truly, we are all one, united, woven together in a single garment. So let us learn to see instead those ties and those connections. And may we then begin this process of unveiling those bonds within ourselves, within yourself, removing any barrier that is keeping you separate. And you will feel that joy of connection with every soul that you encounter. And in this way, we return to our true home, the true home of our soul. So may it be so, and amen. And I invite us now to sing our closing hymn with great intention. Return again to the home of your soul.